Kaladin frowned. She was acting so carefree. Too carefree? Like she'd been back before they'd forged their bond? No, it couldn't be.
Syl, he begged as she returned. Is something wrong with the bond? Please, I didn't...
It's not that, she said, speaking in a furious whisper. I think Parshman might be able to see me. Some, at least. And that other Spren is still here, too. A higher Spren, like me.
Where? Kaladin asked, twisting.
She's invisible to you, Syl said,
becoming a group of leaves and blowing around him.
I think I've fooled her into thinking I'm just a wind Spren.
She zipped away, leaving a dozen unanswered questions on Kaladin's lips.
Storms? Is that Spren? How they know where to go?
The column started again, and Kaladin walked for a good hour in silence before Syl next decided to come back to him. She landed on his shoulder, becoming the image of a young woman in her whimsical skirt.
She's gone ahead for a little bit, she said, and the Parshmen aren't looking.
The Spren is guiding them, Kaladin said under his breath. Syl, this Spren must be...
From him,
she whispered, wrapping her arms around herself and growing small, actively shrinking to about two-thirds her normal size.
Void Spren.
There's more, Kaladin said. These Parshmen. How do they know how to talk, how to act? Yes, they've spent their lives around society, but to be this, well, normal, after such a long time half asleep?
The Everstorm, Syl said. Power has filled the holes in their souls, bridging the gaps. They didn't just wake, Kaladin. They've been healed. Connection refounded, identity restored. There's more to this than we ever realized. Somehow, when you conquered them, you stole their ability to change forms. You literally ripped off a piece of their souls and locked it away.
She turned sharply.
She's coming back. I will stay nearby in case you need a blade.
She left, zipping straight into the air as a ribbon of light. Kaladin continued to shuffle behind the column, chewing on her words before speeding up and stepping beside his captor.
You're being smart in some ways, Kaladin said. It's good to travel at night, but you're following the riverbed over there. I know it makes for more trees and more secure camping, but this is literally the first place someone will look for you.
Several of the other Parshmen gave him glances from nearby. His captor didn't say anything.
The big group is an issue too, Kaladin added. You should break into smaller groups and meet up each morning, so if you get spotted, you'll seem less threatening. You can say you were sent somewhere by Light Eyes, and travelers might let you go. If they run across all 70 of you together, there's no chance of that. This is all assuming, of course, you don't want to fight, which you don't. If you fight, they'll call out the High Lords against you. For now, they've got bigger problems.
His captor grunted.
I can help you, Kaladin said. I might not understand what you've been through, but I do know what it feels like to run.
You think I'd trust you? The Parshman finally said. You will want us to be caught.
I'm not sure I do, Kaladin said, truthful.
His captor said nothing more, and Kaladin sighed, dropping back into position behind. Why had the Everstorm not granted these Parshmen powers like those in the Shattered Plains? What of the stories of scripture and lore? The desolations? They eventually stopped for another break, and Kaladin found himself a smooth rock to sit against, nestled into the stone. His captor tied the rope to a nearby lonely tree, then went to confer with the others. Kaladin leaned back, lost in thought, until he heard a sound. He was surprised to find his captor's daughter approaching. She carried a water skin in two hands and stopped right beyond his reach. She didn't have shoes, and the walk so far had not been kind to her feet, which, though tough with calluses, were still scored by scratches and scrapes. She timidly set the waterskin down, then backed away. She didn't flee, as Kaladin might have expected, when he reached for the water.
Thank you, he said, then took a mouthful.
It was pure and clear. Apparently the Parshmen knew how to settle and scoop their water. He ignored the rumbling of his stomach.
Will they really chase us?
The girl asked. By Misham's pale green light, he decided this girl was not as timid as he had assumed. She was nervous, but she met his eyes with hers.
"Why can't they just let us go?" she asked. "Could you go back and tell them? We don't want trouble. We just want to go away."
"They'll come," Kaladin said. "I'm sorry. They have a lot of work to do in rebuilding, and they'll want the extra hands. You are a resource they can't simply ignore." The humans he'd visited hadn't known to expect some terrible Voidbringer force. Many thought their parchment had merely run off in the chaos.
"But why?" she said, sniffling. "What did we do to them?"
"You tried to destroy them."
"No, we're nice. We've always been nice. I never hit anyone, even when I was mad."
"I didn't mean you specifically," Kaladin said. "Your ancestors, the people like you from long ago. There was a war and storms. How did you explain slavery to a 7-year-old? He tossed the waterskin to her and she scampered back to her father, who had only just noticed her absence. He stood, a stark silhouette in the night, studying Kaladin.
"They're talking about making camp," Syl whispered from nearby.
She had crawled into a crack in the rock.
"The Voidspren wants them to march on through the day, but I don't think they're going to. They're worried about their grain spoiling."
"Is that Spren watching me right now?" Kaladin asked.
"No."
"Then let's cut this rope." He turned and hid what he was doing, then quickly summoned Syl as a knife to cut himself free. That would change his eye color, but in the darkness he hoped the parchment wouldn't notice. Syl puffed back into a Spren.
"Sword now?" she said. "The spears they took from you have all run out, but they'll scatter at seeing a blade."
"No." Kaladin instead picked up a large stone. The parchman hushed, noticing his escape. Kaladin carried his rock a few steps, then dropped it, crushing a rock bud. He was surrounded a few moments later by angry parchmen carrying cudgels. Kaladin ignored them, picking through the wreckage of the rock bud. He held up a large section of shell. "The inside of this," he said, turning it over for them, "will still be dry, despite the rainfall. The rock bud needs a barrier between itself and the water outside for some reason, though it always seems eager to drink after a storm. Who has my knife?" Nobody moved to return it. "If you scrape off this inner layer," Kaladin said, tapping at the rock bud shell, "you can get to the dry portion. Now that the rain has stopped, I should be able to get us a fire going, assuming nobody has lost my tinder bag. We need to boil that grain, then dry it into cakes. They won't be tasty, but they'll keep. If you don't do something soon, your supplies will rot." He stood up and pointed. "Since we're already here, we should be near enough the river that we can gather more water. It won't flow much longer at the end of the rains. Rockbud shells don't burn particularly well, so we'll want to harvest some real wood and dry it at the fire during the day. We can keep that one small, then do the cooking tomorrow night. In the dark, the smoke is less likely to reveal us, and we can shield the light in the trees. I just have to figure out how we're going to cook without any pots to boil the water." The parchman stared at him. Then Khen finally pushed him away from the rockbud and took up the shard he'd been holding. Kaladin spotted his original captor standing near the rock where Kaladin had been sitting. The parchman held the rope Kaladin had cut, rubbing its sliced-through end with his thumb. After a short conference, the parchman dragged him to the trees he'd indicated, returned his knife, standing by with every cudgel they had, and demanded that he prove he could build a fire with wet wood. He did just that.
18. Double Vision. You cannot have a spice described to you, but must taste it for yourself. From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan became Vale. Stormlight made her face less youthful, more angular, nose pointed, with a small scar on the chin. Her hair rippled from red to a lethy black. Making an illusion like this took a larger gem of stormlight, but once it was going, she could maintain it for hours on just a smidgen. Vale tossed aside the Hava, instead pulling on trousers and a tight shirt, then boots and a long white coat. She finished with only a simple glove on the left hand. Vale, of course, wasn't in the least embarrassed at that. There was a simple relief for Shallan's pain. There was an easy way to hide. Vale hadn't suffered as Shallan had, and she was tough enough to handle that sort of thing anyway. Becoming her was like setting down a terrible burden. Vale threw a scarf around her neck, then slung a rugged satchel, acquired for Vale specifically, over her shoulder. Hopefully the conspicuous knife handle sticking out from the top would look natural, even intimidating. The part at the back of her mind that was still Shallan worried about this. Would she look fake? She'd almost certainly missed some subtle clues encoded in her behavior, dress, or speech. These would indicate to the right people that Vale didn't have the hard-bitten experience she feigned. Well, she would have to do her best, and hope to recover from her inevitable mistakes. She tied another knife onto her belt, long but not quite a sword, since Vale wasn't light-eyed. Fortunately, no light-eyed woman would be able to prance around so obviously armed. Some mores grew lax the farther you descended the social ladder. "Well?" Vale asked, turning to the wall where a pattern hung.
"Mmm," he said. "Good lie."
"Thank you."
"Not like the other."
"Radiant?"
"You slip in and out of her," Pattern said. "Like the sun behind clouds."
"I just need more practice," Vale said. "Yes." That voice sounded excellent. Shallan was getting far better with sounds. She picked Pattern up, which involved pressing her hand against the wall, letting him pass over to her skin and then her coat. With him humming happily, she crossed her room and stepped out onto the balcony. The first moon had risen, violet and proud Salus. She was the least bright of the moons, which meant it was mostly dark out. Most rooms on the outside had these small balconies, but hers on the second level was particularly advantageous. It had steps down to the field below. Covered in furrows for water and ridges for planting rock buds, the field also had boxes at the edges for growing tubers or ornamental plants. Each tier of the city had a similar one, with 18 levels inside separating them. She stepped down to the field in the darkness. How had anything ever grown up here? Her breath puffed out in front of her, and cold spren grew around her feet. The field had a small access doorway back into Urethiru. Perhaps the subterfuge of not exiting through her room wasn't necessary, but Vale preferred to be careful. She wouldn't want guards or servants remarking on how Brightness Shallan went about during odd hours of the night. Besides, who knew where Marais and his ghost bloods had operatives? They hadn't contacted her since that first day in Urethiru, but she knew they'd be watching. She still didn't know what to do about them. They had admitted to assassinating Yasna, which should be grounds enough to hate them. They also seemed to know things, important things, about the world. Vale strolled through the corridor, carrying a small hand lamp for light, as a sphere would make her stand out. She passed evening crowds that kept the corridors of Sabaril's quarter as busy as his war camp had been. Things never seemed to slow down here as much as they did in Dalinar's quarter. The strangely mesmerizing strata of the corridors guided her out of Sabariel's quarter. The number of people in the hallways slackened. Just Vale and those lonely, endless tunnels. She felt as if she could sense the weight of the other levels of the tower, empty and unexplored, bearing down on her. A mountain of unknown stone. She hurried on her way, Pattern humming to himself from her coat.
"I like him," Pattern said.
"Who?" Vale said.
The swordsman, Pattern said. The one you can't mate with yet.
Could we please stop talking about him that way?
Very well, Pattern said. But I like him.
You hate his sword.
I have come to understand, Pattern said, growing excited. Humans don't care about the dead. You build chairs and doors out of corpses. You eat corpses. You make clothing from the skins of corpses. Corpses are things to you.
Well, I guess that's true. He seemed unnaturally excited by the revelation.
It is grotesque, he continued. But you all must kill and destroy to live. It is the way of the physical realm. So I should not hate Adolin Colin for wielding a corpse.
You just like him, Vale said. Because he tells Radiant to respect the sword.
Yes. Very, very nice man. Wonderfully smart, too.
Why don't you marry him, then? Pattern buzzed.
Is that?
No, that's not an option.
Oh.
He settled down into a contented buzz on her coat, where he appeared as a strange kind of embroidery. After a short time walking, Shallan found she needed to say something more. Pattern, do you remember what you said to me the other night, the first time we became radiant?
About dying? Pattern asked. It may be the only way, Shallan. You must speak truths to progress. But you will hate me for making it happen. So I can die, and once done, you can...
No, no, please don't leave me.
But you hate me.
I hate myself, too, she whispered. Just, please, don't go. Don't die. Pattern seemed pleased by this, as his humming increased, though his sounds of pleasure and his sounds of agitation could be similar. For the moment, Vale let herself be distracted by the knight's quest. Adolin continued his efforts to find the murderer, but hadn't gotten far. Aladar was High Prince of Information, and his policing force and scribes were a resource, but Adolin wanted badly to do as his father asked. Vale thought that perhaps both were looking in the wrong places. She finally saw lights ahead and quickened her pace, eventually stepping out onto a walkway around a large, cavernous room that stretched up several stories. She had reached the breakaway, a vast collection of tents, lit by many flickering candles, torches, or lanterns. The market had sprung up shockingly fast, in defiance of Navani's carefully outlined plans. Her idea had been for a grand thoroughfare with shops along the sides. No alleyways, no shanties or tents. Easily patrolled and carefully regulated. The merchants had rebelled, complaining about lack of storage space, or the need to be closer to a well for fresh water. In reality, they wanted a larger market that was much harder to regulate. Sabariel, as High Prince of Commerce, had agreed, and despite having made a mess of his ledgers, he was sharp when it came to trade. The chaos and variety of it excited Vale. Hundreds of people, despite the hour, attracting spren of a dozen varieties, dozens upon dozens of tents, of varied colors and designs. In fact, some weren't tents at all, but were better described as stands, roped off sections of ground guarded by a few burly men with cudgels. Others were actual buildings, small stone sheds that had been built inside this cavern, here since the days of the Radiance. Merchants from all 10 original war camps mixed at the breakaway. She passed three different cobblers in a row. Vale had never understood why merchants selling the same things congregated. Wouldn't it be better to set up where you wouldn't have competition literally next door? She packed away her hand lamp, as there was plenty of light here from the merchant tents and shops, and sauntered along. Vale felt more comfortable than she had in those empty, twisted corridors. Here, life had gained a foothold. The market grew like the snarl of wildlife and plants on the leeward side of a ridge. She made her way to the cavern's central well, a large, round enigma that rippled with creme-free water. She'd never seen an actual well before. Everyone normally used cisterns that refilled with the storms. The many wells in Urethiru, however, never ran out. The water level didn't even drop, despite people constantly drawing from them. Scribes talked about the possibility of a hidden aquifer in the mountains, but where would the water come from? Snows at the tops of the peaks nearby didn't seem to melt, and rain fell very rarely. Vale sat on the well's side, one leg up, watching the people who came and went. She listened to the women chatter about the Voidbringers, about family back in Alethkar, and about the strange new storm. She listened to the men worry about being pressed into the military, or about their dark-eyed Nan being lowered, now that there weren't parshmen to do common work. Some light-eyed workers complained about supplies trapped back in Narak, waiting for Stormlight before they could be transferred here. Vale eventually ambled off toward a particular row of taverns. "I can't interrogate too hard to get my answers," she thought. "If I ask the wrong kind of questions, everyone will figure me for some kind of spy for Aladar's policing force." Vale. Vale didn't hurt. She was comfortable, confident. She'd meet people's eyes. She'd lift her chin in challenge to anyone who seemed to be sizing her up. Power was an illusion of perception. Vale had her own kind of power, that of a lifetime spent on the streets, knowing she could take care of herself. She had the stubbornness of a chull, and while she was cocky, that confidence was a power of its own. She got what she wanted, and wasn't embarrassed by success. The first bar she chose was inside a large battle tent. It smelled of spilled lavis beer and sweaty bodies. Men and women laughed, using overturned crates as tables and chairs. Most wore simple, dark-eyed clothing, laced shirts, no money or time for buttons, and trousers or skirts. A few men dressed after an older fashion, with a wrap and a loose, filmy vest that left the chest exposed. This was a low-end tavern, and likely wouldn't work for her needs. She'd need a place that was lower, yet somehow richer, more disreputable, but with access to the powerful members of the war camp underground. Still, this seemed a good place to practice. The bar was made of stacked boxes and had some actual chairs beside it. Vale leaned against the bar in what she hoped was a smooth way and nearly knocked the boxes over. She stumbled, catching them, then smiled sheepishly at the bartender, an old, dark-eyed woman with gray hair.
"What do you want?" the woman asked.
"Wine," Vale said. "Sapphire." The second most intoxicating. Let them see that Vale could handle the hard stuff.
"We got Vary Kimmick and a nice barrel of Vaden. That one will cost you, though." Adolin would have known the differences.
"Give me the Vaden." Seemed appropriate. The woman made her pay first, with Dunn's fears, but the cost didn't seem outrageous. Sabariel wanted the liquor flowing, his suggested way to make sure tensions didn't get too high in the tower, and had subsidized the prices with low taxes, for now. While the woman worked behind her improvised bar, Vale suffered beneath the gaze of one of the bouncers.
Those didn't stay near the entrance, but instead waited here, beside the liquor and the money. Despite what Aladar's policing force would like, this place was not completely safe. If unexplained murders had been glossed over or forgotten, they would have happened in the breakaway, where the clutter, worry, and press of tens of thousands of camp followers balanced on the edge of lawlessness. The barkeep plunked a cup in front of Vale, a tiny cup, with a clear liquid in it. Vale scowled, holding it up.
"You got mine wrong, barkeep. I ordered sapphire. What is this? Water?"
The bouncer nearest Vale snickered, and the barkeep stopped in place, then looked her over. Apparently Shallan had already made one of those mistakes she'd been worried about.
"Kid," the barkeep said,
somehow leaning on the boxes near her and not knocking any over.
"That's the same stuff, just without the fancy infusions the Light Eyes put in theirs."
"Infusions?"
"You some kind of house servant?" the woman asked softly. "Out for your first night on your own?"
"Of course not," Vale said. "I've done this 100 times.
Sure, the woman replied,
tucking a stray strand of hair behind her ear. It popped right back up.
"You certain you want that? I might have some wines back here done with light-eyed colors for you. In fact, I know I got a nice orange."
She reached to reclaim the cup. Vale seized it and knocked the entire thing back in a single gulp. That proved to be one of the worst mistakes of her life. The liquid burned like it was on fire. She felt her eyes go wide, and she started coughing and almost threw up right there on the bar. That was wine? Tasted more like lye. What was wrong with these people? There was no sweetness to it at all. Not even a hint of flavor. Just that burning sensation. Like someone was scraping her throat with a scouring brush. Her face immediately grew warm. It hit her so fast. The barkeeper was holding his face, trying and failing not to laugh out loud. The barkeep patted Shallan on the back as she kept coughing.
"Here," the woman said. "Let me get you something to chase that."
"No," Shallan croaked.
"I'm just happy to be able to drink this again after so long. Another, please."
The barkeep seemed skeptical, though the bouncer was all for it. He'd settled down on the stool to watch Shallan grinning. Shallan placed a sphere on the bar, defiant, and the barkeep reluctantly filled her cup again. By now, 3 or 4 other people from nearby seats had turned to watch. Lovely. Shallan braced herself, then drank the wine in a long, extended gulp. It wasn't any better the second time. She held for a moment, eyes watering, then let out an explosion of coughing. She ended up hunched over, shaking, eyes squeezed closed. She was pretty sure she let out a long squeak as well. Several people in the tent clapped. Shallan looked back at the amused barkeep, her eyes watering.
"That was awful," she said, then coughed. "You really drink this dreadful liquid?" "Oh, hon," the woman said. "That's not nearly as bad as they get."
Shallan groaned.
"Well, get me another." "You sure?"
"Yes," Shallan said with a sigh. She probably wasn't going to be establishing a reputation for herself tonight, at least not the type she wanted, but she could try to accustom herself to drinking this cleaning fluid. Storms. She was already feeling lighter. Her stomach did not like what she was doing to it, and she shoved down a bout of nausea. Still chuckling, the bouncer moved a seat closer to her. He was a younger man, with hair cut so short it stood up on end. He was as alethy as they came, with a deep tan skin and a dusting of black scrub on his chin.
"You should try sipping it," he said to her. "Goes down easier in sips."
"Great. That way I can savor the terrible flavor. So bitter. Wine is supposed to be sweet."
"Depends on how you make it," he said, as the barkeep gave Shallan another cup. "Sapphire can sometimes be distilled talu. No natural fruit in it, just some coloring for accent. But they don't serve the really hard stuff at light-eyed parties, except to people who know how to ask for it."
"You know your alcohol," Vale said. The room shook for a moment before settling. Then she tried another drink, a sip this time.
"It comes with the job," he said with a broad smile. "I work a lot of fancy events for the light eyes, so I know my way around a place with tablecloths instead of boxes."
Vale grunted. "They need bouncers at fancy light-eyed events."
"Sure," he said, cracking his knuckles. "You just have to know how to escort someone out of the feast hall instead of throwing them out. It's actually easier." He cocked his head. "But strangely, more dangerous at the same time."
He laughed. "Kalek," Vale realized as he scooted closer. "He's flirting with me."
She probably shouldn't have found it so surprising. She'd come in alone, and while Shallan would never have described Vale as cute, she wasn't ugly. She was kind of normal, if rugged, but she dressed well and obviously had money. Her face and hands were clean, her clothing, while not rich silks, a generous step up from worker garb. Initially, she was offended by his attention. Here she'd gone to all this trouble to make herself capable and hard as rocks, and the first thing she did was attract some guy? One who cracked his knuckles and tried to tell her how to drink her alcohol? Just to spite him, she downed the rest of her cup in a single shot. She immediately felt guilty for her annoyance at the man. Shouldn't she be flattered? Granted, Adolin could have destroyed this man in any conceivable way. Adolin even cracked his knuckles louder.
"So," the bouncer said, "which war camp you from?"
"Sabariel," Vale said.
The bouncer nodded, as if he'd expected that. Sabariel's camp had been the most eclectic. They chatted a little longer, mostly with Shallan making the odd comment, while the bouncer, his name was Jor, went off on various stories with many tangents, always smiling, often boasting. It wasn't too bad, though he didn't seem to care what she actually said, so long as it prompted him to keep talking. She drank some more of the terrible liquid, but found her mind wandering. These people, they each had lives, families, loves, dreams. Some slumped at their boxes, lonely, while others laughed with friends. Some kept their clothing, poor though it was, reasonably clean. Others were stained with creme and lavis ale. Several of them reminded her of Tin, the way they talked with confidence, the way their interactions were a subtle game of one-upping each other. Jor paused, as if expecting something from her.
What had he been saying?
Following him was getting harder as her mind drifted.
"Go on," she said.
He smiled and launched into another story.
"I'm not going to be able to imitate this," she thought, leaning against her box, "until I've lived it. No more than I could draw their lives without having walked among them."
The barkeep came back with the bottle, and Shallan nodded. That last cup hadn't burned nearly as much as the others.
"You sure you want more?" the bouncer asked.
Storms.
She was starting to feel really sick. She'd had four cups, yes, but they were little cups. She blinked and turned. The room spun in a blur and she groaned, resting her head on the table. Beside her, the bouncer sighed.
I could have told you that you were wasting your time, Jor,
the barkeep said.
This one will be out before the hour is done. Wonder what she's trying to forget.
She's just enjoying a little free time, Jor said.
Sure, sure. With eyes like those, I'm sure that's it.
The barkeep moved away.
Hey, Jor said, nudging Shallan. Where are you staying? I'll call you a palanquin to cart you home. You awake? You should get going before things go too late. I know some porters who can be trusted.
Is not even late yet,
Shallan mumbled.
Late enough, Jor said. This place can get dangerous.
Yeah?
Shallan asked, a glimmer of memory waking inside of her.
People get stabbed?
Unfortunately, Jor said.
You know of some?
Never happens here in this area. At least not yet.
Where? So I can stay away,
Shallan said.
All's Alley, he said. Keep away from there. Someone got stabbed behind one of the taverns just last night there. They found him dead.
Real strange, eh?
Shallan asked.
Yeah.
You heard?
Jor shivered. Shallan stood up to go, but the room upended about her, and she found herself slipping down beside her stool. Jor tried to catch her, but she hit the ground with a thump, knocking her elbow against the stone floor. She immediately sucked in a little stormlight to help with the pain. The cloud around her mind puffed away, and her vision stopped spinning. In a striking moment, her drunkenness simply vanished. She blinked.
Wow!
She stood up without Jor's help, dusting off her coat, and then pulling her hair back away from her face.
Thanks, she said. But that's exactly the information I need. Barkeep, we settled?
The woman turned, then froze, staring at Shallan, pouring liquid into a cup until it overflowed. Shallan picked up her cup, then turned it and shook the last drop into her mouth.
That's good stuff, she noted. Thanks for the conversation, Jor.
She set a sphere on the boxes as a tip, pulled on her hat, then patted Jor fondly on the cheek before striding out of the tent.
Stormfather, Jor said from behind her. Did I just get played for a fool?
It was still busy out, reminding her of Carbranth, with its midnight markets. That made sense. Neither sun nor moon could penetrate to these halls. It was easy to lose track of time. Beyond that, while most people had been put immediately to work, many of the soldiers had free time without plateau runs to do any longer. Shallan asked around and managed to get pointed toward All's Alley. The stormlight made me sober, she said to Pattern, who had crawled up her coat and now dimpled her collar, folded over the top.
Healed you of poison.
That will be useful.
I thought you'd be angry. You drank the poison on purpose, didn't you?
Yes, but the point wasn't to get drunk.
He buzzed in confusion.
Then why drink it?
It's complicated, Shallan said. She sighed. I didn't do a very good job in there.
Of getting drunk? You gave it a good effort.
As soon as I got drunk, as soon as I lost control, Vale slipped away from me.
Vale is just a face.
No. Vale was a woman who didn't giggle when she got drunk, or whine, fanning her mouth when the drink was too hard for her. She never acted like a silly teenager. Vale hadn't been sheltered, practically locked away, until she went crazy and murdered her own family. Shallan stopped in place, suddenly frantic.
My brothers. Pattern.
I didn't kill them, right?
What? He said.
I talked to Balat over Spenreed, Shallan said, hand to her forehead. But I had light weaving then. Even if I didn't fully know it, I could have fabricated it. Every message from him. My own memories.
Shallan, Pattern said, sounding concerned.
No, they live. Your brothers live. Moraes said he rescued them. They are on their way here. This isn't the lie.
His voice grew smaller.
Can't you tell?
She adopted Vale again, her pain fading.
Yes, of course I can tell.
She started forward again.
Shallan, Pattern said. This is... there is something wrong with these lies you place upon yourself. I don't understand it.
I just need to go deeper, she whispered. I can't be Vale only on the surface.
Pattern buzzed with a soft, anxious vibration, fast-paced, high-pitched. Vale hushed him as she reached All's Alley. A strange name for a tavern, but she had seen stranger. It wasn't an alley at all, but a big set of 5 tents sewn together, each a different color. It glowed dimly from within. A bouncer stood out front, short and squat, with a scar running up his cheek, across his forehead, and onto his scalp. He gave Vale a critical looking over, but didn't stop her as she sauntered, full of confidence, into the tent. It smelled worse than the other pub, with all these drunken people crammed together. The tents had been sewn to create partitioned-off areas, darkened nooks, and a few had tables and chairs instead of boxes. The people who sat at them didn't wear the simple clothing of workers, but instead leathers, rags, or unbuttoned military coats. Both richer than the other tavern, Vale thought, and lower at the same time. She rambled through the room, which, despite oil lamps on some tables, was quite dim. The bar was a plank set across some boxes, but they'd draped a cloth over the middle. A few people waited for drinks. Vale ignored them.
"What's the strongest thing you've got?" she asked the barkeep, a fat man in a takama.
She thought he might be light-eyed. It was too dim to tell for certain. He looked her over.
"Vadensaf. Single barrel." "Right," Vale said dryly. "If I wanted water, I'd go to the well. Surely you've got something stronger."
The barkeep grunted, then reached behind himself and took out a jug of something clear, with no label.
"Horned or white," he said, thumping it down on the table. "I have no idea what they ferment to make the stuff, but it takes paint off real nicely."
"Perfect," Vale said, clacking a few spheres onto the improvised counter. The others in line had been shooting her glares for ignoring the line, but at this their expressions turned to amusement. The barkeep poured Vale a very small cup of the stuff and set it before her. She downed it in one gulp. Shallan trembled inside at the burning that followed, the immediate warmth to her cheeks, and almost instant sense of nausea, accompanied by a tremor through her muscles as she tried to resist throwing up. Vale was expecting all this. She held her breath to stifle the nausea, and relished the sensations. No worse than the pains already inside, she thought, warmth radiating through her.
"Great," she said. "Leave the jug."
Those idiots beside the bar continued to gawk as she poured another cup of the Horneater White, and downed it, feeling its warmth. She turned to inspect the tent's occupants. Who to approach first? Aladar's scribes had checked watch records for anyone else killed the same way as Sadeus, and they'd come up empty. But a killing in an alleyway might not get reported. She hoped that the people here would know of it, regardless. She poured some more of that horn-eater drink, though it was even fouler tasting than the Vaden saff. She found something strangely appealing about it. She downed the third cup, but drew in a tiny bit of stormlight from a sphere in her pouch. Just a smidge that instantly burned away and didn't make her glow, to heal herself. "What are you looking at?" she said, eyeing the people in line at the bar. They turned away as the bartender moved to put a stopper on the jug. Vale put her hand on top of it. "I'm not done with that yet."
"You are," the bartender said, brushing her hand away. "One of two things is going to happen if you continue like that. You'll either puke all over my bar, or you'll drop dead. You're not a horn eater. This will kill you."
"That's my problem."
"The mess is mine," the barkeep said, yanking the jug back. "I've seen your type. With that haunted look, you'll get yourself drunk, then pick a fight. I don't care what it is you want to forget. Go find some other place to do it."
Vale cocked an eyebrow. Getting kicked out of the most disreputable bar in the market? Well, at least her reputation wouldn't suffer here. She caught the barkeep's arm as he pulled it back.
"I'm not here to tear your bar down, friend," she said softly. "I'm here about a murder. Someone who was killed here a few days back."
The barkeep froze.
"Who are you? You with the guard?"
"Damnation, no," Vale said. "Story. I need a cover story. I'm hunting the man who killed my little sister."
"And that has to do with my bar, how?"
"I've heard rumors of a body found near here."
"A grown woman," the barkeep said. "So not your sister."
"My sister didn't die here," Vale said. "She died back in the war camps. I'm just hunting the one who did it." She hung on as the barkeep tried to pull away again. "Listen, I'm not going to make trouble. I just need information. I hear there were unusual circumstances about this death, this rumored death. The man who killed my sister, he has something strange about him. He kills in the same way every time. Please." The barkeep met her eyes. "Let him see," Vale thought. "Let him see a woman with a hard edge, but wounds inside. A story reflected in her eyes, a narrative she needed this man to believe."
"The one who did it,"
the barkeep said softly,
"has already been dealt with."
"I need to know if your murderer is the same one I've been hunting," Vale said. "I need details of the killing, however gruesome they may be."
"I can't say anything,"
the barkeep whispered, but he nodded toward one of the alcoves made from the stitched-together tents, where shadows indicated some people were drinking.
"They might."
"Who are they?"
"Just your everyday, ordinary thugs," the barkeep said. "But they're the ones I pay to keep my bar out of trouble. If someone had disturbed this establishment in a way that risked the authorities shutting the place down, as that Aladar is so fond of doing, those are the people who would have taken care of said problem. I won't say more."
Vale nodded in thanks, but didn't let go of his arm. She tapped her cup and cocked her head, hopefully. The barkeep sighed and gave her one more hit of the horn-eater white, which she paid for, then sipped as she walked away. The alcove he'd indicated held a single table full of a variety of ruffians. The men wore the clothing of the Alethi upper crust, jackets and stiff uniform-style trousers, belts and buttoned shirts. Here their jackets were undone, their shirts loose. Two of the women even wore the hava, though another was in trousers and a jacket, not too different from what Vale wore. The whole group reminded her of Tin in the way they lounged in an almost deliberate way. It took effort to look so indifferent. There was an unoccupied seat, so Vale strolled right in and took it. The light-eyed woman across from her hushed a jabbering man by touching his lips. She wore the hava, but without a safe-hand sleeve. Instead, she wore a glove with the fingers brazenly cut off at the knuckles.
"That's Ur's seat," the woman said to Vale. "When he gets back from the pisser, you'd best have moved on."
"Then I'll be quick," Vale said, downing the rest of her drink, savoring the warmth. "A woman was found dead here. I think the murderer might have also killed someone dear to me. I've been told the murderer was dealt with, but I need to know for myself."
"Hey,"
said a foppish man wearing a blue jacket, with slits in the outer layer to show yellow underneath.
"You're the one that was drinking the Horneater white. Old Sulik only keeps that jug as a joke."
The woman in the hava laced her fingers before herself, inspecting Vale.
"Look," Vale said, "just tell me what the information will cost me."
"One can't buy," the woman said, "what isn't for sale."
"Everything is for sale," Vale said, "if you ask the right way."
"Which you're not doing."
"Look," Vale said, trying to catch the woman's eyes. "Listen. My kid's sister, a hand fell on Shallan's shoulder, and she looked up to find an enormous Horneater man standing behind her. Storms, he had to be nearly 7 feet tall.
"This," he said,
drawing out the I sound to an E instead,
"is my spot."
He pulled Vale off the chair, tossing her backward to roll on the ground, her cup tumbling away, her satchel twisting and getting wound up in her arms. She came to a rest, blinking as the large man sat on the chair. She felt she could hear its soul groaning in protest. Vale growled, then stood up. She yanked off her satchel and dropped it, then removed a handkerchief and the knife from inside. This knife was narrow and pointed, long but thinner than the one on her belt. She picked up her hat and dusted it off before replacing it and strolling back up to the table. Shallan disliked confrontation, but Vale loved it.
"Well, well," she said, resting her safe hand on the top of the large Horneater's left hand, which was lying flat on the tabletop.
She leaned down beside him.
"You say it's your place, but I don't see it marked with your name."
The Horneater stared at her, confused by the strangely intimate gesture of putting her safe hand on his hand.
"Let me show you," she said,
removing her knife and placing the point onto the back of her hand, which was pressed against his.
"What is this?" he asked, sounding amused. "You put on an act, being tough. I have seen men pretend—"
Vale rammed the knife down through her hand, through his, and into the tabletop. The Horneater screamed, whipping his hand upward, making Vale pull the knife out of both hands. The man toppled out of his chair as he scrambled away from her. Vale settled down in it again. She took the cloth from her pocket and wrapped it around her bleeding hand. That would obscure the cut when she healed it, which she didn't do at first. It would need to be seen bleeding. Instead, a part of her, surprised at how calm she remained, she retrieved her knife, which had fallen beside the table.
"You're crazy,"
the Horneater said, recovering his feet, holding his bleeding hand.
"You're Anakai crazy."
"Oh, wait," Vale said, tapping the table with her knife. "Look, I see your mark here, in blood. Ur's seat. I was wrong." She frowned. "But mine's here, too. Suppose you can sit in my lap if you want."
"I'll throttle you," Ur said,
shooting a glare at the people in the main room of the tent, who had crowded around the entrance to this smaller room, whispering.
"I'll
Quiet-er, the woman in the Hava said.
He sputtered.
But better.
You think, the woman said to Vale, assaulting my friends is going to make me more likely to talk?
Honestly, I just wanted the seat back, Vale shrugged, scratching at the tabletop with her knife. But if you want me to start hurting people, I suppose I could do that.
You really are crazy, Betha said.
No, I just don't consider your little group a threat. She continued scratching. I've tried being nice, and my patience is running thin. It's time to tell me what I want to know before this turns ugly.
Betha frowned, then glanced at what Vale had scratched into the tabletop. 3 interlocking diamonds. The symbol of the ghost bloods. Vale gambled that the woman would know what it meant. They seemed the type who would. Small-time thugs, yes, but ones with a presence in an important market. Vale wasn't certain how secretive Marais and his people were with their symbol, but the fact that they got it tattooed on their bodies indicated to her that it wasn't supposed to be terribly secret.
More a warning, like Kremlings, who displayed red claws to indicate they were poisonous. Indeed, the moment Betha saw the symbol, she gasped softly.
We want nothing to do with your type, Betha said.
One of the men at the table stood up, trembling, and looked from side to side as if expecting assassins to tackle him right then.
Wow, Vale thought.
Even cutting the hand of one of their members hadn't provoked this strong a reaction. Curiously, though, one of the other women at the table, a short, younger woman wearing a Hava, leaned forward, interested.
The murderer, Vale said. What happened to him?
We had drop him off the plateau outside, Betha said. But how could this be a man you would be interested in? It was just Ned.
Ned? Drunk. From Sadius's camp, said one of the men. Angry drunk. Always got into trouble.
Killed his wife, Betha said. Pity, too, after she followed him all the way out here. Guess none of us had much choice with that crazy storm. But still.
And this Ned, Vale said. Murdered his wife with a knife through the eye?
What? No. He strangled her. Poor bastard.
Strangled? That's it, Vale said. No knife wounds?
Betha shook her head, seeming confused. Stormfather, Vale thought. So it was a dead end?
But I heard that the murder was strange.
No,
the standing man said, then settled back down beside Betha. Knife out. He set it on the table in front of them.
We knew Ned would go too far at some point. Everyone did. I don't think any of us was surprised when after she tried to drag him away from the tavern that night, he finally went over the edge.
Literally, Shallan thought. At least once Ur got hold of him.
It appears, Vale said, standing up, that I have wasted your time. I will leave spheres with the barkeep. Your tab is my debt tonight.
She spared a glance for Ur, who hunched nearby and regarded her with a sullen expression. She waved her bloodied fingers at him, then made her way back toward the main tent room of the tavern. She hovered just inside it, contemplating her next move. Her hand throbbed, but she ignored it. Dead end. Perhaps she'd been foolish to think she could solve in a few hours what Adolin had spent weeks trying to crack.
Oh, don't look so sullen, Ur, Betha said from behind, voice drifting out of the tent alcove. At least it was just your hand. Considering who that was, it could have been a lot worse.
But why was she so interested in Ned? Ur said. Is she going to come back because I killed him?
She wasn't after him, one of the other women snapped. Didn't you listen? Ain't nobody that cares Ned killed poor Rem.
She paused.
Of course. It could have been about the other woman he killed.
Vale felt a shock run through her. She spun, striding back into the alcove. Ur whimpered, hunching down and holding his wounded hand.
There was another murder? Vale demanded. Betha
licked her lips.
I was going to tell you, but you left so fast that just talk. We'd have let the watch take care of Ned, but he couldn't leave it at killing just poor Rem.
He killed another person? Betha nodded.
One of the barmaids here. That we couldn't let pass. We protect this place, you see. So Ur had to take a long walk with Ned.
The man with the knife rubbed his chin.
Strangest thing, that he'd come back and kill a barmaid the next night. Left her body right around the corner from where he killed poor Rem. He screamed the whole time we were taking him to his fall that he hadn't killed the second one, Ur muttered.
He did, Betha said. That barmaid was strangled the exact same way as Rem. Body dropped in the same position. Even had the marks of his ring scraping her chin like Rem did.
Her light brown eyes had a hollow cast to them, like she was staring at the body again, as it had been found.
Exact same marks. Uncanny.
Another double murder, Vale thought. Storms. What does it mean? Vale felt dazed, though she didn't know if it was from drink or the unwelcome image of the strangled women. She went and gave the barkeep some spheres, probably too many, and hooked the jug of horn-eater white with her thumb, then carted it out with her into the night.
19. The Subtle Art of Diplomacy. 31 years ago. A candle flickered on the table, and Dalinar lit the end of his napkin in it, sending a small braid of pungent smoke into the air. Stupid decorative candles. What was the point? Looking pretty? Didn't they use spheres because they were better than candles for light? At a glare from Gavilar, Dalinar stopped burning his napkin and leaned back, nursing a mug of deep violet wine. The kind you could smell from across the room, potent and flavorful. A feast hall spread before him, dozens of tables set on the floor of the large stone room. The place was far too warm, and sweat prickled on his arms and forehead. Too many candles, maybe. Outside the feast hall, a storm raged, like a madman who'd been locked away, impotent and ignored.
"But how do you deal with high storms, Bright Lord?" Toe said to Gavilar.
The tall, blonde-haired Westerner sat with them at the high table.
"Good planning keeps an army from needing to be out during a storm, except in rare situations," Gavilar explained. "Holdings are common in Alethkar. If a campaign takes longer than anticipated, we can split the army and retreat back to a number of these towns for shelter."
"And if you're in the middle of a siege?" Toe asked.
"Sieges are rare out here, Bright Lord Toe," Gavilar said, chuckling.
"Surely there are cities with fortifications," Toe said. "Your famed Kolinar has majestic walls, does it not?"
The Westerner had a thick accent and spoke in a clipped, annoying way. Sounded silly.
"You're forgetting about soulcasters," Gavilar said. "Yes, sieges happen now and then, but it's very hard to starve out a city's soldiers while there are soulcasters and emeralds to make food. Instead, we usually break down the walls quickly, or, more commonly, we seize the high ground and use that vantage to pound the city for a while."
Toe nodded, seeming fascinated.
"Soulcasters. We have not these things in Rira or Iri. Fascinating. Fascinating. And so many shards here. Perhaps half the world's wealth of blades and plates, all contained in Boren kingdoms. The heralds themselves favor you."
Dalinar took a long pull on his wine. Outside, thunder shook the bunker. The high storm was in full force now. Inside, servants brought out slabs of pork and lanka claws for the men, cooked in a savory broth. The women dined elsewhere, including, he'd heard, Toe's sister. Dalinar hadn't met her yet. The two western light eyes had arrived barely an hour before the storm hit. The hall soon echoed with the sounds of people chatting. Dalinar tore into his lanka claws, cracking them with the bottom of his mug and biting out the meat. This feast seemed too polite. Where was the music, the laughter, the women? Eating in separate rooms? Life had been different these last few years of conquest. The final four high princes stood firm in their unified front. The once frantic fighting had stalled. More and more of Gavilar's time was required by the administration of his kingdom, which was half as big as they wanted it to be, but still demanding. Politics. Gavilar and Satius didn't make Dalinar play at it too often, but he still had to sit at feasts like this one rather than dining with his men. He sucked on a claw, watching Gavilar talk to the foreigner. Storms. Gavilar actually looked regal, with his beard combed like that, glowing gemstones on his fingers. He wore a uniform of the newer style. Formal. Rigid. Dalinar, instead, wore his skirt-like takama and an open overshirt that went down to mid-thigh, his chest bare. Satius held court with a group of lesser light eyes at a table across the hall. Every one of that group had been carefully chosen, men with uncertain loyalties. He'd talk, persuade, convince. And if he was worried, he'd find ways to eliminate them. Not with assassins, of course. They all found that sort of thing distasteful. It wasn't the Alethi way. Instead, they'd maneuver the man into a duel with Dalinar, or would position him at the front of an assault. Iale, Satius's wife, spent an impressive amount of time cooking up new schemes for getting rid of problematic allies. Dalinar finished the claws, then turned toward his pork, a succulent slab of meat swimming in gravy. The food was better at this feast. He just wished that he didn't feel so useless here. Gavilar made alliances, Satius dealt with problems. Those two could treat a feast hall like a battlefield. Dalinar reached to his side for his knife so that he could cut the pork. Except the knife wasn't there.